Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Scott Gregory, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. On this edition of our program, we offer another installment in the ongoing Museum Confidential podcast series, which is co-created twice a month by myself and Jeff Martin of Philbrook Museum. The podcast explores what goes on behind the scenes at museums, while also profiling various museum experts and curators and art historians and spotlighting the work they do and why they do it. Occasionally, the podcast will also profile this or that particular artist. And for today's podcast, which has just recently been posted at publicradiotulsa.org and also at Spotify and iTunes, we head to the high desert to visit a small, very small museum in Joshua Tree, California. The world-famous Crochet Museum is the name of this institution, which measures, I think, about 20 by 20 feet. And we will get to know the proprietor of this museum, as well as its history. We hope you enjoy this edition of Museum Confidential, featuring an interview conducted by our roving correspondent, Preston Poe.
We were somewhere around Barstow, on the edge of the desert, when the drugs began to take hold.
There are many kinds of museums, from MoMA to Madame Tussauds, from Orange County to Red Square, and everywhere in between. But museum visitors only see a glimpse of the full picture. On this show, we open the crates, tell the stories, meet the people, and reveal the inner workings. Unseen, unheard, until now. From Philbrook Museum of Art and Public Radio Tulsa, I'm your host, Jeff Martin, and this is Museum Confidential. The world-famous Crochet Museum sits in the middle of California's high desert, near the Joshua Tree National Park Visitor's Center. Don't worry if you've never heard of it. It's not really that, quote, world-famous. The world-famous Crochet Museum is the actual name of the place. Our roving correspondent Preston Poe recently visited this unique desert destination and met its equally unique founder. Here's Preston at a museum in America.
Right off the main road here in Joshua Tree, behind a little gallery called La Matadora, you'll find a fantastic offbeat, maybe a little eccentric, artist by the name of Sherry Elf. And she has her own studio there where she screen prints clothing, patches, all kinds of fantastic stuff. It's all very fun, colorful, and it's kind of refreshing, to tell you the truth. Now, behind there, there's a tiny little place called the World Famous Crochet Museum. It's the only one like it in the world, and it's a lot of fun. So I stopped by and had a visit with Sherry Elf, and she told us all about it. Oh, don't put that in the podcast. We don't want anybody to know you're a clutter person. All right, here, hold this microphone.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's
this
pretty good.
Can I sit down or do I have to stand up?
No, we're going to walk around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're going to be in motion.
All right.
Hi, Sherry Elf. I'm Preston Poe, and I'm here to visit you today and take a look at this amazing museum that you have. And the whole place is fantastic. It's colorful, it's bright, it's interesting, it's inviting. So we're in the desert. It's a stark, beautiful, phenomenal landscape with mountains everywhere. And the sky is just as blue as it can be. So tell me about this amazing museum. It's world famous.
Uh-huh.
I mean, altogether, what is it? We're looking at the footprint is probably like 20 square feet. So it's not too big.
No,
it's a pint-sized museum.
Yeah, it's pint-sized.
And it's bright green. It's chartreuse. Is that the right color?
Yeah.
I'm going with the chartreuse/lime color. And it's a photo mat. I mean, I'm standing right here in front of where you would drive up and you would pass your roll of film back in the days. That's what my dad did. He went by the photo mat. That's where we used to drop off the film. Only it's not used for that anymore. Now it's the world famous crochet museum. Let's go inside.
All right, but it's actually not a photo mat. It is a photo quick because the photo mat had the shingle roofs.
Oh right, okay. Well, we did have a photo mat,
and this. So these are actually more rare. It's the shape. It's fiberglass. And
it
it's
is
like
fiberglass.
The shape of an old camera.
It's like the shape of an old camera. It reminds me of one of those
viewfinder.
Yeah, was it? What was it called? A ViewMaster.
ViewMaster.
It's like a ViewMaster.
It's like a
big ViewMaster, and it's green. And his hand-lettered sign, it says World Famous Crochet Museum.
And it was called Photo Quick at the time.
Photo Quick. Okay. Can two people fit in here?
Yeah, one time we had We've actually had a tiny concert in here. It was about 10 or 12 people.
You had a tiny concert in here?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. All right. We're inside, and it's gorgeous. I mean, it's floor to ceiling, and it's full of bright colors.
I'm fixing his head. The elephant head fell off of these little balls.
And
here.
It's very playful. It's got a kind of a childlike quality about it. And it looks like Grandma made a lot of stuff for the kids.
Definitely. This is what I say about these bottle poodles here, or poodle bottles. I'd say that's where Grandma used to hide the liquor.
Oh, yeah.
Back in Prohibition, right? Maybe that was an invention back then.
Yeah, I can see that. Bottles. What have we got in here? Let's just name off some of the items that we see in here.
I just noticed that's Elvis.
Is that Elvis? It looks like a matador to me.
Oh, maybe it's a matador.
I don't know. All right, you've got a whole poodle department here.
We got poodles.
And there's probably about 50 or 60 poodles. And a lot of them are covering glass bottles. You're right.
Yes, and this crochet museum started with two poodles that Ramona Otto brought to me one year for my birthday. And she said, here, you should collect these. And I said, really? And I looked at them, and I hadn't really thought about crochet poodles before. And then I started finding more, and I thought, well, three of those would look kind of cute together.
Uh-huh.
Those little rhinestone eyes. So maybe if I did get more of these, it would look good. So then the collection just kept growing, and I thought it was going to stop at poodles until I moved to Kansas City, where they had really great estate sales.
Then you moved to Kansas City.
Filled with crochet. If you need crochet, go to Kansas City and go to some estate
sales. That's the hub.
That's the hub.
I see. All right. Now, you've got poodles. You've got watermelon slices crocheted hanging in the window. Yes. And then up here, you've got all of your teddy bear section. I can see that.
Yeah, I kind of try to put them together in sections. It helps me. I'm a Virgo rising, Leo.
Okay.
August 20, but Virgo rising. And so I like things in order here.
Yeah.
And so I have little sections of bears and
you've got a bunch of... The top section is... You got Winnie the Pooh in there. You've got a whole bunch of teddy bears. You've got going down one section. You've got mice and elephants together.
Yes.
You've got tea, which kind of makes sense. You've got tea cozies, and then over here we've got the Latin American section. So there's a lot of people wearing ponchos and sombreros, and then you've got four or five mushrooms here, different colors, beautiful pink, orange, bright. Kind of high intensity color, red.
Yeah.
And then you've got, there are some couples here. What is this, a mouse couple?
I consider them bears.
They're bears.
They're thin
what
bears.
Is this one doing, you think?
He's just got a ball. You know how sometimes bears have a ball.
Oh, all right.
And his wife's just sitting there in her bonnet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, they look like maybe they're headed to a football game. And that might be a football. Like, I don't know. I'm from Oklahoma.
Oh,
that could be like
gosh.
An OU Sooners football situation.
Maybe he's a football player. Wow.
Maybe they're going to a ball game.
She could be a cheerleader.
All right. Now, what's happening over here? This is an eyeball and some lips?
Yes. This was a gift from someone.
Wow.
And I'm sorry.
Okay.
I didn't have the name of the person, but thank you
Okay.
Very much.
So somebody brought this. So you get donations, all the contributions.
I got a whole, like these.
You've got gnomes down here.
Gnomes.
What this is a cake.
These cakes
with the
came
slice
from
that comes
one,
out.
A lovely, lovely friend. She's my Instagram friend, but she sells stuff on Etsy, I think. And she sent me like these, like look at these waffles. She sent me waffles. And sundae, an ice cream sundae. What's that, a s'more maybe?
That looks like a moon pie.
A moon pie. Okay, a couple of moon pies. There's another moon pie. And then there's, look at that lovely.
That's a strawberry shortcake.
Strawberry shortcake, yes.
Yeah, and those are waffles.
Chocolate
those are donuts.
Waffles.
Where's the donuts?
Oh, yes.
There.
Look at these
you got
lovely
a whole bunch of donuts.
Glazed donuts.
Those
even.
Are nice.
Yeah,
that's
and
a cinnamon roll.
Roll.
Yes.
Pretzel. Oh,
very
there's
nice.
Raspberry toast.
Raggedy Ann and Andy.
So
some of these look like voodoo dolls.
People don't really see. They're getting more of a tour.
Oh, this is
from our tour than they will.
They probably
come here.
Will. Mm-hmm. This is the audio tour that goes along with this.
That's a good idea.
And then there's moving over. Here we have the rabbit section.
Oh, yes.
There's a banana
the
split. There's a whole
rabbits.
Dessert section here.
Yes, this is more
and
of
some
my
Humpty
Etsy
Dumpties.
Friend. Somebody just put these feathers in here. I don't know if they belong here. I'm sorry.
Oh. Well, okay. Wasn't me.
They put the feathers in an octopus in the bathtub.
It says here plainly, please kindly do not touch or move items in this museum. Also, nothing in here is for sale.
I kept the, I get that question asked
Cherry
a lot.
Oh, you have Cherry from Pee
Wee Herman? For sale, and then I...
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
We have Cherry from Pee Wee Herman. Uh-huh. What's in Cherry's mouth? A cookie. Someone put a cookie in Cherry's mouth.
Well, it is kind of an interactive. It does kind of invite a little sense
of... It does, unless
like
they see the sign.
You know,
yeah.
They're cuddly things. I mean, you know.
They're very cuddly.
And, what is this? We have the nativity scene
there
here?
There is a nativity scene.
Oh, my gosh.
Scene.
All right.
Baby Jesus is actually just...
There's a mermaid over here.
Girl.
Here's a frying pan with an egg.
That's from eBay. I just...
And you've got some golf club covers here. Mm-hmm. Superman hanging there. You got some clowns over here.
We got clowns.
And you've got 5 ears of corn hanging here.
Yeah, these are also handy pot holders.
All right, tell us... Let's go to the beginning now, and maybe we'll step outside.
All right.
I'm...
Had enough time in my sauna?
It's warm in there.
It is.
So how did you get the idea to start this incredible museum?
I didn't really have the idea until my friend Ramona gave me these 2 crochet poodles for my birthday one year when I used to live in L.A. And she said, here, you should collect these. And I said, really? And then I looked at them and I didn't think much more about it. But then because me and Ramona were both frequenters of the swap meets and thrift stores and yard sales of...
Yeah.
Los Angeles.
Sure.
So I went out there, and all of a sudden, I was seeing crochet poodles, which I didn't see before.
They started to appear everywhere. Yeah.
So I had to buy them because they look really cool when they're a different color, different height, different kind of bright, shiny eyes.
It's like when you buy a Volkswagen and you get on the road and
suddenly you see them
everywhere.
Suddenly you see the Volkswagen. Yes, I was seeing those.
But what made you decide, okay, now I've started collecting them, but now I'm going to have a museum?
Oh, that happened in Kansas City, and I love estate sales and thrift stores, so I would go out. And I would find crochet things. And I'd find a lot of them, a lot of really cute ones for really cheap prices. And so I had to build a shelf, which I put in our living room, and I jokingly called it the Crochet Museum. That's when it started, was in the shelf in Kansas City.
So you had it on a shelf in Kansas City. You'd start collecting these things. First you're in L.A., you start collecting these crochet poodles.
I made a shelf.
Now you're in Kansas City.
Thought that was it. Now I'm in Kansas City.
You've got a shelf in Kansas City, which you're sort of, you know, charmingly referring to as the crochet museum. And then you come to Joshua Tree. You bring all of this crochet work.
But
with
I had
you.
More than that shelf because we were there for 3 or 4 years.
Sure. It's
and
expanded.
So
yeah.
It expanded greatly. I had to have several shelves. At one time, it took over the living room, and Stuart, who was into Eames Furniture, was not quite that thrilled to have crochet all,
right.
all over the living room.
Okay.
So, I had to put
so
it
now it's not one shelf, it's 2 shelves, then it's 3, then it's 4, then it's 5. And now it's so many that it's jeopardizing your relationship. And now you're moving to Joshua Tree, California. And Stuart, whoever he is, God bless you, Stuart, he says, you need to just find some other place to put this stuff so that we can, maybe our relationship will have a chance.
Mm-hmm. This episode of Museum Confidential is brought to you by members. Groucho Marx once said famously that he wouldn't want to belong to any club that would accept him as one of its members. Like some of us, it seems old Groucho just wasn't much of a joiner. And yet, putting aside all that nonconformist party pooping, membership is what it all comes down to here in museum land. Contributions from members, great and small, each and all are what keep the proverbial lights on. At your favorite museum? Members are the key constituency, the lifeblood, the glue, the reason for being, the secret sauce, and every other cliche you want to dish out. When you acquire membership at a given museum, you aren't just signing up for a bunch of newsletters you may or may not read. And you aren't just registering for various openings or galas you may or may not attend. You are spending money on a laudable cause. Whatever the museum you become a member of, dear listener, you are endorsing a worthy institution and thereby fighting the good fight. You, with your membership, are condoning and furthering the very idea that museums stand for and stand upon, which is that museums make the world a better place through the celebration, investigation, and exhibition of life itself. It's creativity, variety, glory, majesty, blah, blah, blah. Join a museum. Whether a museum of art, of history, of science, or of tchotchkes, become a member. That membership kills fascists.
Okay, so You're back here in Joshua Tree. You've got four boxes and boxes of crocheted things that you've collected.
15 boxes.
And now what happens?
So those boxes had to sit in storage for several years till I learned to declutter and not have to have a storage unit. But I would drive by this building, this very building. It was on the side of the road in Yucca Valley, and it was on an empty lot. And I would just look at it, and I would daydream. It was brown and beige.
You're talking about the Photo
Quick building.
Photo Quick building. It was on the corner, empty?
It was sitting on a lot where they sometimes have tax preparer people. And so it's a seasonal business.
So you're driving by. Empty lot. This thing's sitting there, forlorn, lonely, unused.
Yeah, once in a while I stop with my friends, and we look at it. And the funny thing is that I never thought of it for my crochet museum. But one day there was a guy weed whacking there and, you know, taking care of the weeds there. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to stop. So I stopped. That fateful day, I stopped, and I asked him about the museum. I mean, about that building. And he said, well, I got the number of the lady that owns it. She lives over there at the beach somewhere, like Redondo Beach or something. And I said, well, great. So I called her up, and she's like, him and Han go, well, I don't know. At one time, me and my daughter, you know, we owned all of those in California. She had the Northern California, I had Southern. And she was telling me how much they made per week. She was a rich lady. They made lots of money. And this was her last one. And she was hoping to save it for something special.
Dum-da-dum-dum. Yeah.
I didn't even tell her something
special up your sleeve, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, but I didn't even know it. I just was
But you didn't think about it at
thing,
the time.
And then all of a sudden...
But you bought it. You bought it. You were like, okay, I'll take it.
Randy,
you didn't tell her what you were going to do with it?
My boyfriend at the time, Randy Palumbo,
Randy,
okay. He's the owner of Art Queen.
So he Stuart and Randy get a shout-out here
somewhere.
They
get a shout-out.
Yeah, I don't know if we call them co-founders, but let's
definitely.
Say...
Definitely. Oh, he's definitely a co-founder. He paid for that whole building.
Okay. What about Stuart, though?
Yeah, I guess he's a... I don't know. He was a grumpy co-founder.
Uh-huh. A reluctant co-founder.
Reluctant co-founder.
Okay. So, did you tell the lady what you had in mind? Did you know what
I
you
didn't,
had in mind?
I didn't, and I'm not sure I knew, but I think I did, because the weird thing is, say we bought it, I think, on a Wednesday or something. And by that weekend, we had our opening, so Randy really wanted it painted with the sign and all the crochet in there for our opening. So that thing came together just like that. You know, a man with one truck came and delivered it. We happened to have a cement pad right there. And I just did makeshift shelves from boards I had around here. And they're still the same boards there, covered in crochet,
that we
originally threw it together with. So it was kind of, in a way, it was like a joke. And I find myself sometimes feeling like I'm a little lazy because I have so many interests, fashion, music, art, that I'm not passionate about going in there and like doing anything else. Like, there it is.
It's done.
It's done. Exactly. Sometimes things get stolen, so I buy another.
Well, you add things.
Yeah, we add things. Things get taken, all that.
Things happen.
Things happen.
And people donate money to keep it going.
We have that can now because we decided why not?
Why not?
And people have been generous, which is nice.
So how long have you had the Crochet Museum now?
I would say that it's on the wall there, 2006.
12 years. Mm-hmm. And people just come in and do like a tiny little self-guided tour with all of these tiny little things inside of there.
Yes. They're on their own pretty much.
And I'm Preston Poe, and I'm at a Crochet Museum in America.
So that was Preston Poe, our roving correspondent at the world-famous Crochet Museum in Joshua Tree, California, famously known for the U2 album, The Joshua Tree, but might be getting to be known more now for the Crochet Museum. I wanted to bring in our producer, Scott, to talk a little bit about quirky museums and a little bit more. Scott, tell us about Preston Poe. How do we find out more about him?
Preston Poe has a podcast that's on iTunes, Spotify, or at PrestonPoe.com. And I think he just put up his third episode. So if you want to check that out, PrestonPoe.com. And of course, there are so many, Jeff, off the beaten path, dare I say, kind of weird museums out there in America. Tell me about one.
I was a little nervous to use the W word.
Well, I mean, let's just put it out there. I mean, they're a little bizarro sometimes. In fact, I'm going to set you up. Tell me one you've been to, and then I'll think of one that I've been to, because I know you've been to many.
Yeah. One of my favorite ones is actually not that far from here. It's in Dewey, Oklahoma, and it's called the Tom Mix Museum.
Cowboy actor.
Yeah. So Tom Mix, for those of you who don't know, was an early cinema Western actor, did lots of silent films. Strangely enough, not born in or died in Oklahoma. I have no idea why there's a museum for him. But it's this weird little tiny space, kind of looks like a little log cabin, not very big at all, but it's full of ephemera and memorabilia. But years ago, I was working on a project and I was working with a writer, and the writer wrote a fictional take on the Tom Mix Museum. This was a writer doing a piece imagining what Oklahoma might be like.
Oh, okay.
And so...
So they sort of imagined what that museum might be like.
Yeah, having never been there before.
But knowing that it existed.
Knowing that it was a real place.
Okay, cool.
So this writer wrote this piece, and when I read it, having been to the museum before, I didn't recognize it at all, because in the fictional take, the museum was a statue of Tom Mix.
Okay.
That was the size of the Statue of Liberty, and you would have to walk up into it.
Oh, wow.
And ascend
into the mix.
It. Yes. And so Tom Mix had this famous horse called Tony the Wonder Horse, which is kind of like his Trigger or Silver or any of those famous Western horses. But there were many Tony the Wonder Horses. So one of the things that the guy talked about in the piece of fiction was that there were stuffed, because there were many Tony the Wonder Horses, because, you know, horses die, accidents happen. There were many stuffed Tony the Wonder Horses as you went up into the statue of Tom Mix. And then when you got to the top and you were looking out the eyes onto these rolling hills, which there aren't a lot of rolling hills in that part of the state, you saw this giant rock formation on the side of a mountain. This is all made up, by the way.
Sure. This is the imagined version.
Of the horse, right? Oh. And so...
Rocks in the shape of the horse, that's the
landscape.
Kind
of a silhouette, someone had made to where when you looked out the eyes of the giant Tom Mix statue. So it's a very cinematic take on this very humble little space. But what's funny is after that came out, I had several people ask about coming to visit that, not realizing that...
Yeah.
So I didn't want their expectations to be, you know, too high.
Right.
It's a cool little place, but it's definitely not that. So that's a fun little spot. Where have you been?
Okay. Now, the one I was thinking of, and this is going back to like the 90s when I was attending a book convention in Houston, Texas. The place is still around because I just Googled it. The National Museum of Funeral History, just off the highway in Houston. And it's one of those museums that's basically like a converted warehouse. Like, my memories of it are rows and rows and rows of hearses. Like, some of them are old cars, some of them are newer hearses, some are like, you know, horse-drawn carriages, like from Victorian times. And then there's all of these displays about like what people wear at funerals. And like, there's something on their website now about the newest exhibit, I guess, there is the history of cremation.
So just urns, lots of urns.
Yeah, and
how, like, we burn people.
Yeah. I'm making it sound really ghoulish, but the weird thing about it is how, like, I mean...
Is it a classy joint?
It's just not ghoulish. It's surprisingly sort of upbeat and colorful for
it's kind of a
museum of funeral.
Happier place than you would imagine?
Yeah, maybe, in the way that sometimes... An episode of 6 Feet Under, that HBO program, so great, that was set in a funeral home, but sometimes you'd forget you were in a funeral home, you know, like the show could be upbeat and not necessarily about death and dying. That's sort of the experience that I had at this place. Which...
Any reason why it's in that place?
No, and I don't ever remember learning why it's in Houston, Texas. Again, just right off the highway.
I guess that's one good thing, is that the topic could go anywhere.
Indeed. You know, and in this case, it's like in the middle of, you know, a series of box stores and strip malls, and it's right there. The National Museum of Funeral History.
Yeah, not just like the Texas Museum
of
Funeral History.
No, this is according to the website, America's largest collection of authentic, historical funeral service items.
Yeah. We often say, it's in our intro, that there are many kinds of museums, and there really are. And we could never go to all of them. There are so many.
We can never list them all.
No. And one of the best things about these kind of places is stumbling upon them, not expecting them, or maybe just hearing about it when you're visiting some place and they say, you got to go check this thing out.
Right.
So if you're listening and you know of a funky, little quirky, and I'll go ahead and use the pejorative that Scott used, which is weird.
It's a term that I use with love.
Send us a note about it at newsletter@philbrook.org.
Newsletter@philbrook.org. Okay.
And tell us about it. Tell us where it is, why we should check it out. If you have any fun photos or anything from trips that you've taken to these places, tell us about it. We want to know about your favorite museums in America. In early 2016, Guinness World Records announced that a group in India had successfully made the largest crochet blanket in the world. So large it easily covered the football pitch, that's a soccer field to us Americans, on which it was laid. Initially, the woman behind the project planned to go for the title alone. She soon realized that she'd need help, and she turned to social media to invite Indian women across the globe to unite as part of the group that eventually came to be known as Mother India's Crochet Queens. Over 1,000 participants aged 8 to 85 from India as well as 13 other countries contributed by creating hundreds of 40 by 40 inch sections to make one enormous blanket. Believe it or not, this record has been broken. But these tenacious crochet queens have broken two more records since the blanket. In 2017 with a scarf more than 46,000 feet long, and again in early 2018 for the largest display of crochet sculptures. To break this latest record, the group created 58,917 individual pieces. The previous record was just over 13,000. Talk about spiking the football, or whatever the equivalent is in soccer. That's our show for this week. Museum Confidential is produced and edited by Scott Gregory at the studios of Public Radio Tulsa. To learn more about what's going on at the museum and at the station, visit philbrook.org or publicradiotulsa.org, or both. We suggest both. Until next time, look closer.
Museum Confidential is a twice-monthly podcast co-created by myself and Jeff Martin of Philbrook Museum. The podcast is available at publicradiotulsa.org for free and on demand. Just go to publicradiotulsa.org and then look for the tab that says podcasts. You can also find it at iTunes or Spotify. Also, to learn more about Preston Poe, our roving correspondent who's actually an old friend of mine, we met at Edison High School late in the Reagan administration, you can go to PrestonPoe.com, where you will find his podcast, The Preston Poe Show. You have been listening to Studio Tulsa. I'm Scott Gregory, sitting in today for Rich Fisher. You can access previous editions of this program at StudioTulsa.org. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll see you next time here on Studio Tulsa.
The University of Tulsa welcomes the Greater Tulsa community to a wide array of athletic events, artistic performances, exhibitions, academic lectures, and symposia held on campus. Our public events are open to all. Requests for accommodation of disabilities may be directed to Dr. Tawny Rigsby at 918-631-2315. To ensure availability of an interpreter, 5 to 7 days' notice is needed. 48 hours is recommended for all other accommodations.